Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Building Sustainability Podcast with me, your host, Jeffrey Hart, aka Jeffrey the Natural Builder. Every fortnight, join me as I talk to designers, builders, makers, dreamers and doers, exploring the wide world of sustainability in the built environment by talking to wonderful people who are doing excellent things. Hello and welcome to episode 78. This is the second episode of Conversations from Future Build in London 2022. These two episodes are very much standalone, so you can listen to them in whichever order you want. I should say they are a bit loud, and I can only really apologise for that. There is a secret plan of mine to build a straw bale recording studio for the next Future Build, and we will have tip-top sound quality. So maybe this will be the last time that you have to put up with slightly shonky recordings. Before the episode, I wanted to let you know that the lovely team behind the Shift Bristol Roundhouse Builds have started a new company called Sheltercraft. They are building roundhouses and you can go and join them, learn how to build it. You'll get all your food, you'll learn, you'll meet great people. It's a wonderful thing to do. There is a link in the show notes for that. I believe their build is in the Forest of Dean. And speaking of roundhouses, this past week I got to spend a very enjoyable couple of days at a friend's roundhouse, Tom Ingle, who is the partner of Kaz Ingle, who is a friend of the podcast. Tom has been working tirelessly to build this beautiful, beautiful roundhouse. Another friend of the podcast, Will Stanix, organised a fantastic course bringing across plastering legend James Henderson. James was teaching clay plastering techniques while Will was spraying hempcrete onto the outside of the bales. Yeah, it was pretty idyllic. Beautiful place, beautiful people, wonderful food. So yes, thank you to everyone involved in that. I cannot wait to go back and put in the earth floor and maybe do a bit of plastering as well. This is normally the section of the podcast where I read out the new patrons, but we don't have any. So I will just take this opportunity to say that this podcast costs about £100 a month to run. That's software and websites and domains and fees for the Patreon, all those things that are very boring and all add up. So currently what's left over is about £200, which translates to me earning about £50 a day that I work on the podcast, which is a little bit below minimum wage. And yeah, I really don't like this asking for people to support the podcast. It makes me feel a bit horrible, but kind of needs must. So yes, if you do get some value from the podcast, it would be great if you could find just £2 a month to support it, to support me. And yeah, £2 a month from you does add up with all the other £2, and it means that I can support myself and dedicate even more time to this podcast. So thank you very much. I'm sorry, I know this is boring to listen to. Okay, on with the podcast. First up, we have Brian Murphy from the Green Building Calculator. And I should say, there are a couple of little swears in this episode, just minor ones. Enjoy.
Yeah, so I'm Brian Murphy, otherwise known as Brian Speckman. Brian Speckman at everything else. And I'm Green Building Calculator. So during COVID, I had some time on my hands, so I built a calculator. And I started with two calculators I created at university for students. merged them together and thought, oh, I could add a few more bits. But it started because one of my students was a part-timer. And he said to a man, all the part-time students took it back to their offices and started using it in the real world. So I thought, okay, COVID gives me an opportunity. I've got a month spare on my hands, do something. And it grew to 2 years. And now I've got a very big, powerful calculator that will do all of your energy, all of your embodied carbon, sequestered carbon, all of that data sets. And the next round will be about life cycle assessment added to it. But then we've got 33 other versions of it to develop to interrogate every other aspect of the building. Reclaim, reuse, recycling, plastic avoidance, everything you can imagine. And we're going to have a starter, a meeting probably in a couple of weeks where we gather everyone who's scanned in and we will say to them, this is what we have. Big ambitions. We've got loads of other interested parties with loads of good data sets. We've got other people who want to build a front end to it, another one who wants to build a CAD interface. So we'll get together, thrash out what we're going to do, scratch our heads about where's the money coming from, and get on with it. So it's going to be exciting.
Nice. Well, it sounds like you've got a lot of work ahead of you.
Absolutely.
So who's going to benefit?
Everybody, the planet, the humans on the planet itself, biodiversity will benefit. It'll all, because we're driving. The aim is to make carbon reduction simple, because the construction industry hasn't a clue. The greenies know how to do it. We've been doing it for 20 years, 40 years. We just make it readily available for everyone else. So it's switching from all of the usual plastic-based insulations and the middle-of-the-road insulations towards the bio-based and the plant-based and the tree-based thermal insulation materials. Low carbon, carbon positive, as opposed to carbon negative, and then get on with it. Challenges, you can't do that unless you've got your pricing right, and everyone's got violet price books, and so we end up with a green client and a violet price, and so we never, ever get to a green building. So we've got to start with a green building price book, which we'll build online to suck in information from manufacturers, suppliers, and installers, so that we've got all of the right data so we can do proper pricing, cost planning. And then once we've got all of that fed into the calculator, we can do intelligent value engineering instead of the bullshit that we do at the moment. I hope the language doesn't...
That's fine. No, yeah. They love it when we swear.
Okay. Swear a bit more then. So, yeah, I mean, it's just trying to bring all of that information, all the data, all in one place. So if you make one decision, I'm going from building regs to passive house, it instantly recalculates everything. If you choose a material and then switch to a different material, it instantly gives you the results of everything. Embodied energy, embodied carbon, in-use energy, in-use carbon, in-use cost, because we've got all of the data sets to interrogate and give you the answers on the spot.
Right. Is this, I mean, I'm not an intelligent man. I can't work out this stuff, but I specify a lot of materials in my job.
Yeah.
Is it simple enough that...
Well, we've had...
it's a complex thing.
It's a complex, it's a big complex thing, which is why I've tried to make the calculator do everything for you. You still got to tell us what you want to know. So how big is your building? How many floors? What's the floor area? How many windows? How big are the windows? All that stuff. You've got to feed it in. Yeah. What temperature do you want? We've even, in the retrofit version, we've built in a little nugget which says, and how do you dress? Do you wander around the house in your knickers or do you wander around in thick, heavy jumpers? Which sets your temperatures? Which sets your energy demands?
Right.
So it's that kind of simplicity. And the retrofit version has a whole set of ready-made house types. You choose a house type. It then populates a load of the cells and does 90% of the calculations for you. And then it will ask you for all of the other bits that of information that I need to know in order to give you the answers. And now we've also had people come up to and say, look, I know, and I say it myself, architects can't read. However, architects can't excel either unless it's easy. So somebody said, let me build you a beautiful interface. So we'll have a beautiful interface so that it's simple. So it'll be, what do you want to know? Give me an answer. Okay, now I'll go and do a bit of number crunching. Choose from a list. Now I'll do a bit more interesting and I'll give you some results. So it'll be that kind of interrogation of you and your project.
Yeah.
And it's all color-coded. All the cells are color-coded. If it's green, I want some information. If it's red, choose from a list. If it's blue, here's the answer to your question. And if it's brown, I've interrogated your answers, and I've searched the database, and here are the results. And we've done a risk assessment in the retrofit version, which will probably find its way back into this. So that tells you, and if you do that, there's a slight risk that this is going to go wrong. So you might want to reconsider your approach or your material choices. So it's just trying to be a bit more intelligent. And the other bit, you know, the golden thread that the post-Grenfell is driving is that when a manufacturer invents something, then they invent it for a particular purpose in a particular place. There are some manufacturers who've been a bit unscrupulous and wanted to use their product everywhere and allowed it to happen. What we're doing is collecting the data from people so that we know where it should be used, and we will only ever show it where it should be used in the calculator just by using intelligent spreadsheets and drop-down menus and lookup tables. So it will only ever offer you the stuff that's relevant. Now, that's probably version 3, 4, 5. We're on version 2. We're about to launch version 2. Version 1's been out since COVID 1. We've got version 2 that's come out with COVID 3-ish. And we've got COVID 3 to 33 waiting in the background. So they've got plenty to keep developing.
No.
So we've got plenty to keep us busy.
Yeah.
We'll keep on developing it. And if we can get all of the parties that have shown an interest in what we're doing to come and join in,
yeah,
and if we can find a way of funding it. And that's partly through people subscribing to the software. And it's very low-cost entry. Students, £4. You know what AutoCAD and all of those other big, powerful things, that, you know, it's £4,000 a year or whatever it might be. We're £4.88 for a student.
Brilliant.
One-off. And if you want to subscribe, £4.88 per annum. And if you're an architectural practice, big one, £98.88 once or £98.88 per annum for all of the updates, all of the extra modules that we're going to build as time progresses. So it's low entry, get in there, start doing it. And the primary thing is that we've got to learn to know intuitively what is low carbon building, so that we do it automatically without thinking. And we reach a point where clients get a low carbon building, whether they ask for it or not.
Yeah, it's not even an option.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is it. It's not. Is it upfront carbon as well as?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Everything.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm getting the impression that.
Yeah.
It's
so version one was in use carbon.
Yeah.
Version two is upfront carbon, and it will progress to do life cycle assessment in version 3. Full. So you'll be able to do environmental product declaration data will feed to an environmental building data. So you'll have an environmental building declaration. And then when Belgium do what they said they would do in 2012 is that they will fine you for development based on your EPD or your environmental building declaration, and if you substitute, we'll fine you for those changes, so that we actually fine you for what you're doing. Fining rather than taxing, because everybody hates a tax, but they're quite happy to be fined for some reason, strangely.
The psychology of that.
Yeah, isn't that weird? But anyway, that's we want to give you all of the tools, and we want you to first be able to do value cost planning, and then also value engineering. And the value engineering is intelligent value engineering based on the facts are in front of you, and if you change one thing, it goes all through the calculators and gives you new results. We'll do scenarios, scenario one, scenario two, scenario three. You can do your an assessment, lock the cells. Do your second assessment, lock the cells. Do your third assessment, lock the cells.
And then compare.
And then you can do the comparisons.
Brilliant. Where can people get
it? It's already greenbuildingencyclopedia.uk. It's already there. Volume one, version 1 is already live, and you can download it now. But version 2 will come out any day now.
Probably by the time this is released, it should already be out there.
Possibly, yes.
I'm not that quick at editing.
Well, I'm reckoning it's probably another week's work, but I've got to find that week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this your full-time job now?
Effectively, yeah. I still do the occasional diversion to do a retrofit version of it, and I'm doing a survey of a property in the Hebrides. And you know, but I'm not doing the survey. I'm teaching other people how to do the survey to feed the data set. I used to do specification writing, but I've moved on.
Yeah.
So this is my fourth career, And I'm doing it when I had a letter this morning saying, would you like to apply for your pension? So this is my fourth career and it's the beginning of my... So my wife is probably not going to be that happy, but I'm hoping we might get to sit on the top of the, on the roof of a caravanette and look at the stars somewhere in the West Country somewhere.
Thank you so much, Brian. Really love what you're doing and can't wait to get in and use the calculator. I think that's an invaluable resource and I love that you are pricing it so, so fairly. We'll now go straight across to friend of the podcast, Roland Keeble. He is the Rammed Earth guy, but he is here with his Ibuki, the Earth Building UK and Ireland hat firmly on his head, and he is talking about the Cobbage project.
So Cobbage is a project to make cob meet thermal building regulations in England and France. And it kicked off with discussions between Plymouth University in the southwest of England and Caen University in the northwest of France. They both have cob traditions, or what we call mass earth now, to try and get away from the vernacular. And they started talking about how to meet regs, and they went to Interreg for funding. And it was a very big application. And Interreg said, we wouldn't give you that much money until you could prove it. So we'll give you a bit of money and then you prove a concept, and then we'd give you a bigger amount if you can prove the concept. So at that point, there were a lot of different project partners, including Bath University, who then dropped out for some unknown risk reason. And they said, why doesn't Ibuki become the industry partner? And so we kind of went along with it and went along with it, and then eventually it started. And we then said to the project team, you cannot make high-density insulation and you cannot make low-density structure. So you have to make a two-part material. And the French partners really brought the idea of formwork, which is a which is not like concrete formwork, which is like a hard board, but it's a mesh. And it means that you can put the material into the formwork and leave the formwork in place while it dries. And then you remove it, and you're not then limited to the height that the material will allow you to build to. Because cob, you know, typically it might go to a meter, but but a lot of the cob traditions, it's much lower than that. But with, you know, if you had full formwork, you could go to 2 meters or 3 meters or 4 meters in one hit. But then you have to leave it to dry, the formwork in place. So there's program issues, as with a lot of earth building stuff. There's program issues that you have to think your way around. Once you've thought your way around it, then it's actually not a problem. It's just something that you've thought your way around. And so, so we developed this way of putting these two materials into a formwork. So you've got a normal, in inverted commas, cob mix, which might be 2% straw or fiber of some sort. And that's laid into the formwork at, let's say, 400 millimeter depth, thickness of wall. And then you're putting a little kind of... displacement false work into the formwork, so that
is that a fancy way of saying a bit of wood to keep things apart?
I mean, we'd also say a block out in rammed earth language. We'd say that's a block out. You put a block out in, and then you've blocked out something that you didn't want to fill in.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you're blocking out one side of the formwork, filling it with cob on the other. Then you remove that block out, and then you put the lightweight. Light earth mix in, which is typically, let's say, hemp shiv, but it could also be a straw or a flax shiv. We actually, with Cobbage, trialed 6 different soils, 3 from the UK, 3 from France, and 6 different fibers or bioaggregates, mainly for their thermal performance. and so they're, you know, typically, well, they're called waste, but it's kind of a nonsense word. And byproducts or co-products or whatever you want to call them. And so then you've got the the normal cob mix next to the hemp, lightweight hemp mix, and they bond extremely well together. I mean, we're just standing here with some little samples, the sort of 75 by 75 samples. And I mean, there's just no way that you can pull those things apart. You actually need a little breaker to get those things apart. They are properly bonded, and it's not with glue. It's yeah. just the clay. So it's a very effective. It's very effective. I mean, it was surprisingly effective.
What are the purposes of the two different materials?
So the cob is the dense stuff. That's what holds up the roof. That's what holds up the first floor. That's what holds the heat. That's what buffers the heat, because it's a dense mass material. It's 1.82 tons to the cubic meter kind of a thing. And the light earth mix is about 0.3 of a ton to the cubic meter. And so then, if you're in passive house, that means you're going to have to make the insulation layer this thick. And if you're just trying to meet current regs, it's going to have to be that thick. And if you're trying to meet regs that are coming up soon, then you have to do some other thickness, right? And the reason I'm not going to talk about actual thicknesses is that, if it's hemp shiv, it's one thing. If it's a chopped straw, it's something else. If it's a, and so on and so on. But there are figures, there is a website, and there are figures for how these different materials behave. And then you can look at it and say, actually, in this case, it's just not worth bringing hemp shiv all the way from wherever. Or, I've got an enormous pile of whatever it is outside. And then you're going to think about those figures and therefore those thicknesses. It was a very interesting, at the opening of the project, one of the academic partners at Plymouth knows how to take, what's it called, thermal imaging. With a thermal imaging camera. Mm-hmm. And he lives in a cob house, or so he thought. And I mean, basically, it's a white house. And he showed us this picture of his white house. And it's just a white Devon house. And you kind of go, oh, yeah, that could be cob, yeah. And then he took a picture. He sort of set it all up correctly so that there was the right amount of heat inside, and temperature outside was cool enough, or however he said it. And he took this picture. And then you saw, like, it was like undressed. It was behind the white.
The dirty
secrets were revealed. And actually, the 1990s sort of insulated concrete block work was just about as good as the 1700s cob work, right? So that was, there's always this sort of thing about, well, it's cob is a mass material and it doesn't meet regs because, it doesn't stop the heat.
Yes.
But actually, they're thick walls. There's this whole dynamic thing going on that you're putting heat in the building and then you're turning it off and then the heat comes back out into the building. You do lose some, but not all of it. So, you're starting at a better, much, much better base level than a concrete block. So another bit of the revealed part of his building was 1980s concrete block, which they hadn't insulated. That was just really, really shocking, this thing of the thermal performance is, I mean, it is really interesting. And if you're taking clay at site and putting 2% fiber to it to make a structural material and 50% fiber to it to make an insulating material, it's essentially the same material, it's the same binder, it works well together, it's perfectly vapor permeable, it's just doing all these things. It's a two-part wall system, and then you say, okay, and then on the outside, so we would think, well, the insulation bit is going to go on the outside, and that is more susceptible to weather damage than would be a normal cob wall. So that one you're going to put a weather screen on. And so there's sort of various different ways of thinking about that. It might be a wood cladding, or it might be a lime render or whatever, but you've got to protect it. And overhangs and all that usual jazz,
Good building practices.
Good building practices, decent detailing,
Yeah.
But the main thing is that you've got the wall and the insulation coming up together in one hit. working very well. So there's definitely no extra membranes or any of that kind of stuff. There might be a clay plaster inside. There might be a lime render outside, but that's it. And as part of then thinking about a passive house strategy, or, you know, it's definitely very low draft. Once you've built the details around the openings, there are no, you know, there is no other loss of pressure in the building.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. And when I started, like, I'm the Rand Earth guy, okay? and so I was kind of thinking, well, you know, really we need some more COB people on this project, because I'm really the Rand Earth guy and I don't really know very much about this. And, you know, what's COB anyway? And then as we've gone on with it, and then with the introduction of formwork, of course, now I'm sort of back in my comfort zone.
Mr. Formwork,
you know. and I can sell that to a builder quite easily, because builders understand formwork. Mm. You go, oh, clay, oh, that's a bit tricky. Oh, here's formwork. Oh, okay, here's formwork. So that, those things work well together. And so I could see how, and we've been making little short training films, and we've got some training films of digging, extracting site material, making mixes on site, adding straw to them, and you're making, you know, tens of tons of mix in a day with a digger, and there's your feedstock. Oh yeah, that's actually really basic, and unlike Rammed Earth, you haven't got to keep the stuff dry, right? It's like, oh, fantastic. So yeah, I think it's a really interesting, I think, the, you know, it's a really interesting project. And I think that, as with all earth building, the more people that do it and the more contractors that do it and take it seriously, the more the technical solutions will sort themselves out. And, you know, these guys will be using concrete formwork, which they've stripped down all of the plywood from and put a mesh on it, and they can make 6 meter high cobos walls. And these people will be making up their own formwork from 2x1 and a bit of mesh, and then taking it apart at the end and using it for battening for the roof at the end of the build. Do you know what I mean? Or whatever. So yeah. So it's
accessible at different levels.
It's completely, like all earth building, it's totally scalable, right? It's totally scalable. And that's really, really important for people to understand. This is not something I do at home. This is not only for the big boys. It's completely about the size of the contract, the value of the contract, you know, the size of the team you've got. And I say, the more people that do it, oh, did you see Jeffrey? He did that really neat detail. Oh, yeah, that was really cool. Copy. Fantastic. It's the best, you know, it's, what is it, the sincerest form of flattery. Oh.
And my details are the best.
And Jeffrey's details are the best. Come on.
So how far into the project are you? We got a showcase?
So we did the part one. We did the proof of concept. When we spoke to the funder about it, they said a lot of the stuff that we fund is kind of cultural projects, which are really hard to measure. This one's really easy to measure. Either the heat comes through or it doesn't come through. So when the heat didn't come through, we had proof of concept. They said, okay, here's the bigger amount of money. And then we could then start building bigger sections, kind of 2 meters by 1 meter and so on. And then then it was to build two kind of proto buildings, one in Normandy and one in Devon. Those are both have roofs on them now.
Are they dry? And
they're getting drier. Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah, they're getting drier.
They haven't quite got to the proof of being a building yet.
Well, they've got roofs on. They've got openings. You know, they've got openings filled with doors and windows and all of that. But I just heard that they are not going to plaster the Plymouth building for another little while.
Because?
They think that there's still, I mean, they know that there's still moisture in the wall, because they've got a whole lot of probes and detectors for absolutely everything, temperature and...
Love university.
Yeah, you know, all that stuff. But I'm surprised in a way that they wouldn't just plaster it anyway, because they're standing up under their own weight. Mm. And that's the biggest weight they're ever going to stand up under. The roof is essentially nothing. So putting another, you know, 10 mil of clay on the inside face, I don't really think is going to be a big deal. Maybe not lime render the outside, because that will slow down the drying to the outside phase. So there's sort of fine tuning about that. Obviously,
well, as you'd expect from the first two buildings,
right? And also that you'd expect that that it's not going to be losing moisture particularly brilliantly in February in Devon. Okay, mm-hmm. So you know there are sort of things where you say, well, okay, I can get this up and I can put it up at some speed. I can do it to program. But there is still a seasonal thing that if you're doing it in June, it's going to be losing moisture faster than if you're doing it in November, right? So, that, yeah, they are also little things to consider.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's two buildings up. Then the next stage is that it's going on site in East Anglia on an actual build.
North Norfolk?
Yeah. Yeah.
I enjoy saying North Norfolk. It's one of those fun ones. North Norfolk. Say it with me.
No, I'm a South Suffolk man myself.
Oh, bitter rivals.
And so that's going to be the next thing is with the demo at Plymouth, it was a cob builder who'd never used formwork and a contractor who'd never used cob.
Nice.
And that was a very, very interesting moment to see how those two interacted and what their findings were, given the suggestions that we'd made on how you put things together and program and so on. And so this is now the next phase of that, really, is actually a builder that hasn't used cob, probably used formwork, and how do they pick it up? You know, what's the learning curve like for that?
Yeah. Where do you see this? What do you see as a potential future coming out of this?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey there, I'm Mick from the Mick and Pat Show.
That's right, and I'm Pat.
Looking for a podcast that's like catching up with old friends? Well, you're in luck.
We're here to bring you weekly doses of lifestyle commentary, discuss culture and politics, and top it off with the occasional beer and film reviews.
But it's not just about us. We're a community. Our listeners are our kin, and we let you all have a say in what we discuss.
So saddle up and join the conversation at the Mick and Pat Show. You can check out our website or find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I mean, it's very interesting. So you're talking to me at Future Build 2022. We haven't had a Future Build for the last couple of years. The conversations that we're having here are quite different, actually, to how they were 2 years ago. And people are beginning to think about decarbonisation a little bit more seriously than they were 2 years ago. And so all of there is no silver bullet, right? It's not that rammed earth is going to answer all of our questions or, you know, moulded clay bricks or anything. Nothing is going to answer all of the questions. But I definitely see Cobbo's as having a really nice niche, because the craft skill of building cob, I think, does take longer to implement than the craft skill of putting formwork together and putting a cob mix in. The craft skill of making a cob mix with a digger, as opposed to the craft skill of making a cob mix with your feet and a tarpaulin. You know, all of these elements sort of pull together so that you could say, well, actually, do you know, I don't think this is going to happen with a drone. I mean, I was picking up bits of doing my little demo here and thinking, this is really sticky stuff. It's really difficult to pick up. But with a front end, you know, with a bucket loader, yeah, I think I could see that happening, you know.
Roland is referencing a podcast about AI drones building cob homes, which you should definitely listen to.
Which was really, really interesting, especially when they got halfway through the show and they admitted that there were no batteries on the drones and that they were tethered by a wire which powered them. And I thought, okay, well, that's kind of interesting. Yeah. I still think picking up that sticky cob that I've got over there be really hard work, but anyway, I think that and so that's, you know, more fool me, because in 10 years time, when you see those drones coming up your road cob in hand, you go, oh, that Roland, he really hasn't got a clue, has he?
He lacked foresight.
He just couldn't see the future. Yeah.
Do you see this as having a retrofit benefit for existing cob homes?
Part of the project was to look at markets and potential markets. And so we looked at EPC data. It's what you have to do when you sell or let a property in the UK. And that, they brought that in 2005. And it's the Energy Performance Certificate. Thank you.
It's that little A star to D or F.
That's right. That's right. And they you know, they're supposed to look at everything from the single glaze window to the, you know, the mouldy door frame to, and they have, and there's a column for walls, and somebody said, oh, aren't there those, you know, funny buildings down in Devon? And so cob is actually one of the things that you can put into your EPC report. And so we started breaking down those numbers because they're published, the government publishes them. And we found that there had been 12,000 cob house sales in the last sort of 10 years. These are the ones that have sold or rented. These are not the ones that haven't sold or rented. So we know that there's probably like a load more.
Yeah, and there's some that they don't even know a cob.
And there's a lot that they don't know a cob, and a lot of them are mixes of cob and stone or cob and brick or, you know. And so a lot of those things, if you've got central heating in them, you probably, and you know, and they're like the what I referenced earlier, that picture with the thermal imaging camera. Some of them have got horrible brick extensions which are spewing out. So if you want to keep them looking the same, you take off the horrible cement render and you retrofit light earth on the outside because it'll stick to your existing cob.
Yeah.
And then you rain screen it, and now you've got a perfectly vapor permeable building again, which is also insulated. So that to me is like a really big potential. It's a really big potential. Whether you spray that stuff on with a spray rig, or whether you make a light formwork on the outside and you pat it all in place, doesn't really, you know, that's not really the point. But yeah, definitely retrofit.
Are there any key points that you want
to... Are there key points to think about? I think one of the things that's really become clearer and clearer to me is that people send me an email saying, we want to do something in rammed earth. And then you say, where are you? Oh, you know, here, somewhere. What's the material there? Oh, no idea. So why do you want to do rammed earth? Oh, well, you know, we saw it in a magazine or...
It's very nice to look at, isn't it?
Oh, it's so pretty, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And so more and more I can see, you know, my response now is, well, tell me what your material is. You know, send me the site investigation and I'll give you a comment. And the comment more and more is, you really want to make this into blocks. This is really good cob material. Oh, that's perfect for rammed earth, right? Depending on what it is.
Yeah.
And so that you're looking to your site to tell you what to do. You're not looking to Cobbage to tell you what to do. You're not looking to rammed earth to tell you what to do. You're looking at your site and the material that you have close available to tell you what to do.
You're talking about a return to vernacular.
No, I'm talking about a return to local.
Is that not vernacular?
No. Well, I don't see it in quite that way. I think that because, you know, people have sort of criticized introducing rammed earth into sub-Saharan Africa, right? They don't criticize introducing concrete blocks into sub-Saharan Africa, but they do say that rammed earth isn't a traditional thing there. That's for North Africa. And so what are you doing? No, it's a local material that works well in this context or this context or this context. And so I think it's, you know, Cobbage is not a, you know, I mean, cob is vernacular. Cobbage is not. Right? It's a new thing. It's a new way of looking at materials. So it's not vernacular, but it could be local to you. And then, you know, the word cob is a vernacular word, which doesn't really have currency in Cumbria, where it's clay dabbins, or Scotland, where it's mudwall, and why we started to talk about mass earth rather than cob, because it's just a generic term.
Yeah.
And we're not against Clom, right? Clom is perfect in its place.
Before I get angry emails.
but if I sort of started talking to, you know, builders in East Anglia about Clom, you just get a rather a blank, even more of a blank look than, you know, if you said Mass Earth. So we're just trying to think about how language is useful in getting people to reconsider materials. So because we know that when I came back to the UK in sort of 98-99, the old guys still talked about pisé de terre, right? And that was the kind of vernacular term for rammed earth in the UK, and we started calling it rammed earth. And in 20 years, nobody really talks about pisé de terre unless they happen to be in France, where that's the vernacular term, right? And now people give the name and the word currency. So these kind of making things a little bit more generic, maybe it gives them a little bit more currency now. Then you take it to Devon and you put up a cobbo's building or a cob building, whatever, and you use the local vernacular word and you're doing something local. Yeah, this vernacular thing is tricky, isn't it? It's tricky. I don't think that I'm talking about a return to vernacular, because that all, again, that always really sounds like, I don't know, that you're
kind of a bit regressive.
Like you're a Luddite, you know. You're going to go break the frames. Whereas I just kind of think, if you're doing stuff locally with, you know, with materials that are local and technology that works locally, that's what I'm in favor of. If you want to call it vernacular, it's fine.
What a nice way to wrap that up. But maybe.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many thanks to Roland and Brian for their wonderful words. That's all from me. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes if you would like to support this podcast. I would love you forever. Okay, until next time. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.